Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball. It's trade deadline week, so what else are we going to talk about? And who else are we going to talk to about it? It's KMOX's Kevin Wheeler joining for his pretty much monthly segment here on BBIB. You know the drill. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined again by my good friend and the voice you all know and love. It's KMOX 1120. Oh, I need to do the FM now.
Oh, yeah, 104.1,
baby. 104.1,
baby,
KMOX.
Can you do it like the trucker, like the Sunday guys? Like 104.1, KMOX.
I could. All right, let's try this again. It's a voice you all know and love, 104.1 FM, KMOX, Kevin Wheeler.
Look at that.
Did I do it? That's my best
FM style right there, buddy.
That is my best Mike Farron.
He's the best, man. I love Mike.
He is the best, and he's probably listening right now. He's like, that is not a good Mike Farron.
It's not, but once you said it, I got it.
Yeah. It's as close as I can get to, this is why I write for a living. All right, Kevin, let's get going. It's trade deadline week. Clock is ticking to July 31st. It's nice of Major League Baseball to put it back at July 31st because that's the date we all have grown up knowing is the trade deadline. Let's just start right off. You're the St. Louis Cardinals, Kevin Wheeler. Buy or sell?
Well, so...
Come on.
No, listen, I've been joking about this all week.
You're fitting right in with the Cardinals.
Exactly. This is exactly my point. Like, it's never clear. It's never clear. Like, in the last 3 or 4 years, when has anything ever been clear? It's just always muddy. It's always, just when you think they're done, they rise from the ashes. And just when you think they figured things out, they poop the bed. It's like, what? I don't understand any of this. Now, I'll be honest. Because of all of that, I'm getting to my answer because of this. Because of all of that, I'm not buying. You know, I've been playing this yo-yo middle of the road back and forth thing now for several years.
So wait, so is not buying, does that mean selling? Or
because I'm not standing pat either. Standing pat doesn't make any sense. Got it. I could change my mind if I'm Mo, if I'm in that seat. If you, let's say, wind up a game out of a wild card spot or in a wild card spot come Thursday, the day before the deadline. I'm sorry, that's Thursday's deadline. So Wednesday, the day before the deadline, because Thursday's an off day for the Cardinals. So if I'm getting to that point, I might change my mind, and it may make me push things to the deadline. I don't know if that's too risky, Derek. I mean, that could mean teams that need something move before you're willing to move, and I don't know that I want to risk that in some of these cases. But, you know, there's this balance between doing what's sensible, which is probably not counting on this year, right? I mean, there are too many teams that are clearly better than you. But we've also seen that, you know, if you get in, you got a chance. And as we're recording this, they're only a game and a half out of a wild card spot. You know, and the teams that are around them aren't exactly what I would call super superior, right? I mean, the Padres have had offensive problems all season long. The Giants just still haven't found any footing, and they've been playing terribly lately. The Reds are, you know, they're all right. I mean, they're very similar to the Cardinals in terms of offense. Their pitching's better, but their record's almost exactly the same. So I could make a case to do kind of a soft buy, but it really does depend on, unfortunately, how this last week looks, right? I mean, here's the thing.
Maybe this is the better way to look at it. Yeah, okay.
So maybe this is the better way to look at it. What are you actually going to get from the players you want to trade?
We just had two
everyday players traded. Josh Naylor to Seattle and Ryan McMahon to New York, and the returns were very minimal. They were nothing exciting. I mean, Arizona got two 22-year-old A-ball pitchers who throw 92. You know, they didn't get anybody that's super exciting for now. It's a rental, but Josh Naylor's an everyday player, not a reliever. But that's a guy that's in the lineup every day. And I know the Yankees price was low because they took on the money, right? They took on $36-37 million with McMahon. But does that, I mean, if I'm not getting anything of significance, maybe I would make the argument to just play it out. Like if I'm being offered somebody else's number 10 prospect, I don't know, is that worth it to when you're a game and a half out?
So this is a question that I asked John Mozeliak in Denver when he met at Coors Field with a few of us and was talking about the trade deadline and also waxing nostalgic a little bit about being back where his career began. You know, he had about 12 people there, including his parents and sisters, and they hadn't been together in the same place in a long time, he was saying. You know, a few of them still live in the Denver area. That's obviously where he grew up out there, Boulder. And his first job was throwing BP to Group One of the Colorado Rockies, the first year of the Colorado Rockies in 93 at Mile High. So we talked a little bit about that. But the question I asked him was, you know, buy, sell, whatever. Why don't could you let the offers make your decision more than the standings? And I was like, why not let that dictate? Like, if you go, like, don't look at the standings, look at what you're going to get.
Yes.
And so that's way different than any trade deadline they've ever had, right?
Yeah. And it makes sense considering what we're talking about, right? Because you're kind of eternally stuck in the middle. Well, does it make sense to sell for guys that are similar to what you already have?
Yeah.
And just adding depth that, of guys that may or may not ever get to the big leagues?
No, that's the thing is, like, when they sold in 2023, you know, you understand when, in hindsight, they explained that they just wanted to accumulate pitchers, right? And it makes sense, right? They were lacking pitching at the top. They were coming off not too far removed from one of the worst winning percentages for an organization in minor league baseball history. Yeah. And the sole reason for that was because the pitching absolutely cratered. Like, at almost every level, they had the worst ERA. I remember trying to get the minor league data for all minor league teams and looking at just how awful the Cardinals ERA was as an organization compared to others. And it was dead last. So they wanted to accumulate pitching.
Yeah. And they were also, you know, terrible.
What, in 2020? Yeah, they were out of it. They were gone. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and they knew it. And and they could look to the standings and go, all right, we're not getting anything. We have Jordan Montgomery. He's pretty good. Let's get a bunch. And I mean, it kind of worked out for them, right? I think it's fascinating that, you know, 2022, they acquire Jordan Montgomery and they acquire Chris Stratton in separate deals. Then 12 months later, they flip them in the same deal for, you know, a really good return. Even like the day of, we're like, well, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good return. You get the Texas League MVP, you get a rising, though injured, starting pitcher, and you get a lefty immediately in the majors. That's pretty good. And it's played out that it was pretty good.
It's all right. I mean, as far as deadline deals go, it was pretty good.
So if you make the offers dictate it, like that's kind of what I wonder. And you know where you're going to end up then if you let the offers dictate whether you move or not? You probably end up trading Helsley. You may trade Maton. You probably end up keeping Mats, despite there being interest in him, because you wouldn't go like the offers outweigh, right? Like the offers for him, you can kind of tell. But you're going to have a real decision to make on some of the conversation teams want to have about redundant spots.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Infield.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, teams going, well, so where does Brendan Donovan fit into your future? Where does Nolan Gorman fit? Nolan Gorman being of interest to some teams. Where does Jordan Walker fit? Is this the time, you know, is this the time to have those conversations?
I mean, I think you have to have them, you know, I mean, gather information that you can take into the offseason at the very least. Doesn't mean you wouldn't pull the trigger now, but again, if it depends, this is the hard part for me and for all of us. I think, Derek, maybe you've got a little bit better finger on the pulse of this, but how much is Chaim Bloom involved in this? I would assume, my assumption would be quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, because
everything is building toward his takeover here in a few months.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know what he thinks about Mason Wynn, Brendan Donovan, Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman, Lars Nootbaar. Like, I don't know how he sees them and whether he sees them as fits or must keeps. Or does he look at some of those guys and go, man, I can get a good return for those guys.
That is,
we got a lot of those guys, so we're not hurting. We're not going to be filling up. You know, J.J. Weatherholt's ready, and he's good at any of those positions as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, do you simply break it down? Like, it's weird because these are two conversations that match, right? Do you let the offers dictate what you're going to do at the deadline, and do the offers dictate who you move rather than who you keep? And it's, in other words, we love Brendan Donovan, right? Brendan Donovan's a guy. He's a leader. You know he's an all-star. You know he's stable defensively. You know he's a consistent hitter. You know that. But that also is why he might get you a better return than moving an unknown like Nolan Gorman. What do you get? Like, what's the offer? What are the offers like for those two guys? Maybe it's more for Gorman because he's younger and he's got power. But I don't know that. What I'm saying is maybe that's what helps you determine your next step forward. Rather than saying we want to keep this guy and move that guy, maybe you're like, all right, let's see. We look at all of the ideas that we're presented with. Which ones give us the most that we don't have? Because yeah. We do have a lot of redundancy, you know, second base, shortstop, left field, DH, third base. I mean, and there's no question that you have to clear it up by whenever you have to, you know, by the time you have to fix your 40-man roster in advance of the Rule 5, because you got a bunch of prospects you need to add to the 40-man too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming due. You also are in the same spot that you're always in then, because you're like, well, is the guy that we trade the one who goes off to be the latest NLCS, Adolis Garcia?
Yeah, but at least if you're a new guy like Bloom, you can't let the past be a part of your current thought process, because you weren't in that past. That wasn't you. You didn't make those decisions. You got to kind of trust yourself, right?
No, but then maybe it's an off-season deal, right?
When
it's clearly, and it's not a trade deadline. When you ask, okay, so he's involved, right? Like, you know, more and more, like every so often, you know, Mo offers some insight as to where Heim Bloom. So Heim Bloom was involved in the draft in an advisory role, right? Like, is he making the picks? No, but you know, Mozeliak was pretty strict when we talked. He and I talked about this for a little bit, and he was talking about, look, Randy Flores is hired to do the draft, and he and his staff spend 12 months preparing for this draft, or more really, because they're always kind of cycles of drafting, right?
Right.
And you're scouting guys who are available in 2027 at some point, you know, 2 years early, right? He said, so they're constantly preparing for this. So what does it say when someone who is in charge hires someone to devote that much time to something, and then comes in and says, hey, thanks for the 12 months of work. I read your files in 12 minutes. Now I'm going to make the pick. That's not how that's supposed to work. He said, so Randy Flores, you know, makes the choice, but there's input from a lot of different people.
There was a clear change in philosophy.
Right. And so
the guys they took were not the kinds of guys they were taking before.
No, you're right. And it's clearly that there was some influence in conversation with Rob Serfolio and the player development group that Heim Bloom brought in for, let's get these kinds of pitchers. Right?
Yeah.
And in the same way, you know, and I looked at this in the newsletter that I write for the Post-Dispatch, right fielder, WRITE. Get it?
I get it. Okay. Took me a minute.
Oh, you get it? Oh, thanks for subscribing, Kevin.
Took me a minute.
Oh.
Yeah, I think I do. I see it every week.
All right. Thanks, man. But I looked at, like, okay, who are some minor league players that have the profile of the players the Cardinals just drafted? Like, who are some of these minor league pitchers who teams who are looking to trade, who do they have at their lower levels or in their mid levels, or really even did they just add to their bullpen that have these traits that the Cardinals just drafted? And are those places that the Cardinals could look for a return on their trades? Because it's clear that that's where some of the influence is coming in. Anyway, to the larger question about, like, is Heim Bloom involved? Yes, and because he has experience, he has expertise, he has acquired players, he's been involved in trade deadline, and it would be malfeasance for you to have an employee on your staff with experience in doing something without asking for his input. And then, you know, you can say many things about the Cardinals, how siloed off they've been until the last few years, how conservative they are, how risk adverse they are, all of those things. You can say all those things, but one thing that they haven't really done and have often pushed back against is when someone isn't utilizing the expertise available.
Right.
I mean, that has gotten people, you know, I mean, the people who have done that have been, a couple have been fired.
Right.
You know, hey, you have this person here to help you. You refuse to let them help you. We can't continue with this. So, you know, that's where Haim is. I mean, he's on the staff. He's employed. They're going to turn the keys over to him. To not use his expertise in this matter would be silly. And so they're not. But Mozeliak's going to make the final call. His point has been, though, if it involves a longer term thing, his goal has been to simplify, clarify, and create flexibility on the roster so that what Haim inherits is as mobile and ready to go as possible, without extra baggage, without extra clutter,
without having to make a Mookie Betts trade that makes everybody mad.
Correct. Now, the side part to that is what fans probably didn't want to hear, was that he didn't want to leave him with a roster that made it imperative to win next year. And I was like,
right,
all right, then that's probably not what fans wanted to hear. But
no,
I understand what he's saying.
No, I get it. Yeah. You're talking about expectations, not plans. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to agree with it. And you don't have to, you can counter that whether or not that goes against their brand or not. And that's fine. But what his point is he wants any pressure to win, to not be inherited, but to be initiated.
Right.
That's the difference. Okay. Sure. So yeah, so he's involved. And if you're talking about out years, you nailed it, Kevin. Like, exactly. What does he think about these guys? And, you know, you're not going to get that answer.
Right.
I'm not sure how, I mean, certainly privately and internally, they want that answer from him. Oliver Marmol and him talk. Rob Serfolio's around the big league team enough, and they talk a lot. So, you know, you're going to get some evaluation there. But I could also understand why, you know, those total evaluations about, like, okay, where does this guy fit into the future? That may be a November talk. May be it. Or actually, probably, you know, to be honest, it probably is a September talk. So they hit the ground running.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's what is really fascinating about this idea of letting the industry come to you. And if the offers are moving enough, then you do something. And by the way, if you like blow four or five games in a row and you're six games out or something, well, that's another thing too. You know, I mean, because there's a big difference between where they stand today and where they could stand in 4 days.
Really? Okay. Take me through that. Walk me through.
Well, I mean,
because it feels like small sample size theater to make.
No, I choices. Get it. I'm talking about you're evaluating the big picture.
Yeah, yeah.
At the point when you're starting to have to make yes or no answers, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, is it hard to overcome a game and a half with three teams between you and a playoff spot? Yeah, but it's still only a game and a half. If that turns into five,
yeah,
that your odds are getting much smaller when you're talking about. Now, it's not impossible. Like, this is the problem, is do you play for the unlikely? Because, you know, we saw what happened in 2011 with a huge deficit erased, but that you needed a lot of help, right? You needed a whole other team to completely go down the hill. We watched Detroit do this last year. They sold at the deadline and then went nuts, but you can't try for that, right? Like, that's one of those things that might happen, but you can't be like, well, we'll sell and we think that might happen. You know, you're doing it based on the merits of where you stand when it's time to make decisions. Right. And, you know, if you're five games, I don't know what the exact number is. I don't know why five feels different than 3.5. Maybe it's just the visual of seeing a big old five right next to your name and you're five games out. But so something tells me the way this team goes, it won't be that. It'll be two. It'll be something where it's not clear.
Well, I mean, it sets up to be really radically difficult in those regards. I mean, especially so they've won the first two against the Padres. They have two more at home against the Padres.
Yeah.
You know, what's reasonable to expect? I mean, they've won the first two. Is it reasonable to expect that they win the series?
Probably not. Then
they win those series. They go three out of four. I mean, they just need to win one of the next two as we're talking.
Yeah.
And so maybe they do, maybe they don't. But all right, let's say they split the next two. That seems reasonable. You know, then they Then the Padres leave town a game and a half up on the Cardinals. It stays right where it is.
Stays where it is.
And the Cardinals welcome in the Marlins at home for three games. Meanwhile, the Padres go face the Mets, who are kind of good, right? And then they have three games against each other in San Diego next week.
So right.
After the trade deadline.
Right.
It is entirely possible, Kevin, for the Cardinals to go to end this weekend a game and a half out to reach the trade deadline a half game up on the Padres. Who knows what other teams go? A half game up on the Padres. Or if they sweep the Padres, a game and a half up on the Padres. Then the trade deadline hits and the Cardinals sell. And then they go into a weekend where they are leading the team who they had previously been behind in the wild card chase without three relievers to hold any leads. And then they fall out of it before going to, or they fall out of it on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I can see it both ways from the Cardinals, right? Like, you have to be pragmatic about the fact that you have three West Coast swings yet to go.
Uh-huh.
Three. How reasonable is it for this team with this starting pitching to survive what's ahead? Like, if you just keep it pat, like, could you survive? Yeah. But then what kind of regrets do you have if you don't add to it and wonder? And I think what we're going to, I think what we're facing right now is a real clear view, like we as a media and then the fans as well. I think we're going to get a real clear sense. It comes at such a fascinating time, Kevin, a litmus test of how much value is that third wild card. How much does it really matter to be the third team into the play? How much are you really willing to stretch just to eke into
the play? How much different is that scenario than being the second best division winner? You're playing in the wild card round.
No, that's my point.
Like, you're on the road, but you're playing in the wild card round. You have the same 2 out of 3 chance as the second best team in the league.
Absolutely. That's part of the factor, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's fascinating that we might learn that, right? How much do the Cardinals actually value just eking in? Are they willing to stretch just to eke in, or are they willing to be positioned to eke in and pull the ripcord?
Yeah, I mean, and then look, there's another element of this especially from their view. And look, I've gotten feedback from fans.
Mm-hmm.
Both directions here. I've gotten feedback from fans that are like, this team's not going to contend or win anything. They should sell, and not worry about it. And mm-hmm. and I think that's a valid view. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. I see that argument. And then there's the other side. I'm getting feedback from fans that are saying, how do you sell when you're a game out?
Yeah.
How do you do that when you, how do you sell? And then I add to that, you have to weigh public relations a little bit too, right?
Do you?
I think you do in the sense that you're part of this season is winning back the confidence of your fan base. And you're running out of time. There's an element. But it'd be a bit of a show of faith. Because look, you know how it is, Derek. You get the feedback the same way I do. There's an element that is never happy, and they're never going to be happy. They don't like Mo. They don't like Ollie. They don't like anything. They think that a 500 team is trash, that it's like the White Sox because they're spoiled.
Yeah, and but they also won't like the next people who take
this is my point, right? Yeah. That group I'm not worried about.
Yeah.
I'm not winning them over. I can't convince them.
Right.
If I'm the team or myself, I can't convince them. Because you and I seem to be the same. We're kind of in the middle road, which is it's neither terrible nor good. It's not good enough, which we all agree on. Like, you know, especially when you're considering the recent history of the team. Hell, even the long-term history of the team. They've just never been terrible. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a long time since they were truly a terrible team. And
2023.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's like,
no, I'm joking.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. 20 games under 500 is a terrible team. There's no, but it's one time in like, I think I looked it up, but like the last time before that they lost 90 games was like when?
I mean, it was two generations ago.
Yeah. It was like in the 1940s, right? Or 30s. That was the good era. Was it the 60s or 50s? Okay, 50s.
And you but had like, a really bad team in the 70s.
I don't think they've lost 100 games in 100 years.
They have not. And they haven't like, had back-to-back.
That's a truly terrible team as a 100-loss team. That's a truly terrible team.
They haven't had back-to-back losing seasons, Kevin.
Yeah.
since the 50s.
Yeah,
since
I know.
Stan Musial was on the team.
And this is kind of the point, right? So that's why I'm not that concerned. If I'm the team, I'm not trying to win over the people that are basically at this stage unwinnable. They're only winnable if you're a 95 to 100 win team and you win a World Series. Those people will be then you're your fans. Mm. Like they're fans. They're not going anywhere, right? They watch every day. They follow every move. They're just not happy. And then there's you know, I'm sorry, this is going to sound mean, but like then there's the kind of the sweater knitters that are always happy. They're never going anywhere. They're always at the games. They're always going to be there. They love their team, and that's who they are, and they're never going to change that. They don't ride the wave. And then there's, I think, the largest majority of fans are kind of in the middle, and those are the people that fuel attendance. Mm-hmm. And if I'm somebody that's on the fence about buying season tickets, if I'm somebody mm-hmm. that's on the fence about going to games in August and September, and they sell, they're telling me they don't want me to come to the game if I'm in that position. If they give it a shot, and let's say they hang in there, and I look at it, and all right, it's September 1st. Man, we're in a wild card spot, or we're game out. I may go. I may start to attend. Now, again, it's not going to be 40,000 fans. It's not going to be what it was 7 years ago or 8 years ago. But do you have any response? I mean, do you have any desire at all to control or impact essentially what your customers think of your business?
Yeah. I mean, is this the high water mark, though? Like,
maybe.
Like,
it could be.
I mean, you look at the Padres series, and they had Florida in for a Friday night concert, and, like, they're nosing up against 30,000 tickets sold.
I mean, I'm not even...
The heat is terrible.
Yeah.
But they're in the race now.
Right.
They're
playing. But I'm not even talking about just this year.
No.
I'm also talking season tickets. I'm also talking building a better relationship with those, because I think a lot of people that are just normies mm-hmm. are going to take great offense if you're selling when you're a game out of a spot or you're in a spot.
I just wonder if the toothpaste is out of the tube in that regard, because we've already...
It may be, but then again, like, what's the return on Maton? You know, like, I'm not exactly concerned if Maton walks and I get nothing. It's fine. I got him on a flyer right in spring training. Like, who cares? I don't care if Steven Matz walks and I get nothing for that. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's accurate, but I don't know why they would hesitate on a qualifying offer for Ryan Helsley.
That's a great question. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I've talked to Ryan Helsley a few times about this, and he's been very candid about wanting to stay. His preference mm-hmm. is to be a Cardinal. You know, he's brought it up that he'd like to stay long term. You know, he's brought it up that he'd like to explore an extension with him. He also has said, look, I know how this goes, and I'm fully prepared to be traded. I know that, you know, I knew that going into this season. I know that coming into the end of July, that the way this could end is me being basically a reliever for hire at the trade deadline to go and try to excel in October and see what happens.
Right. Right.
So walk me through the qualifying offer, you know, pros and cons, because what that does, just so everybody is very clear, what that does is that sets the price that all teams must meet
right.
to trade for him. Now, how does that work? Can I explain that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So if the Cardinals offer Ryan Helsley a qualifying offer, they are likely going to be guaranteed a pretty high compensatory pick because of the contract he'll sign. Now it's right. based on the amount of money that a guy gets, amount of years, all that stuff. He's in line for that. So the Cardinals will get a strong pick. Let's say top 70, right? Top 75 pick. Now they put a dollar.
And the money that goes with that too, which is something they care about. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's tradable.
And it's tradable. Correct. It's a tradable pick. There's dollar that increase your bonus that allows for a little bit more strategy, which they really, really put into play this year.
Yeah.
By moving things around and then going above slot to get the young Memphis outfielder, Ryan Mitchell, who's got a lot of talent, to Georgia Tech commit, all that stuff. So they put a dollar figure on the value of that pick. It's not the slot value. It's the dollar for what they expect that pick to produce as right. far as major league return.
Right.
You have to surpass that with the offer.
Right.
And they also will weigh that against the $20 million plus that it costs if Helsley says, yeah, sure, why not? I'll take it.
It might and be why 22 this year. It was 21 last offseason.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit more this year. It went down 1 year. It'll be a little bit more this year. Thanks, Juan Soto. it'll be a little bit more this year, but still that's what they weigh against. So just to like bring it all in, the Cardinals weigh the dollar figure it would cost them if Ryan says I'll stay against the value of the pick they'll get if he leaves.
Right.
And if you're a team that wants to trade for him, they can go, you have to surpass what we value that pick at with your offer.
Right.
Very simple. It's like one of the most simple mathematical trades out there.
Right.
And the Cardinals evaluate players in terms of the dollar figure value of the production they expect, and they can run the numbers and say, yes, this is a good deal. They can run.
It's just a fancy way of evaluating what you think of a player. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's something that Michael Gersh brought in. It's something that the Cardinals have really distilled. They've been able to do it throughout all levels so that they can come up with a homogenized way of evaluating players. And they don't talk about it in terms of, you know, stratification, essentially.
Yeah.
The Astros, shocker, did the same thing. A lot of teams.
I was going to say that this is not just a Cardinals thing either. This is industry-wide. And certainly, even, I mean, there are third parties out there that do it.
That do it now.
That too, publicize it. Yeah. So we all have access to similar, they won't be the same, but similar concepts.
But this is one of the, this is one of the things that Michael Gersh brought to the Cardinals long, long ago, was how to do it with draft picks.
Right.
And now it's widespread with how to do it with all players. So that's the background. Now give me the pros and cons of going qualifying offer and keeping Ryan Helsley.
Yeah. I mean, the con is he accepts.
I mean, if you keep him, don't you have to do it?
I would. I mean, I've seen varying kind of musings that they don't plan on doing it, but look, I get it.
Why?
I don't know. I get that if he says accepts
it. Somebody has to explain to me why.
Yeah, I understand that if he accepts it, it means you're paying your closer $21 million. That's fine.
Oh, no.
I know, right. And it's 1 year.
Be still
it's
my heart.
Still someone you could trade in season if the season doesn't go the way you want. But what if you're good? What if you're good? Then you've got a closer and you've got $17.5 million coming off the books with Miles Michaelis. You got $12.5 million coming off with Steven Matz. I mean, for God's sake. And then Helsley's already making $8 million. So if you just add Steven Matz to Ryan Helsley, that's Ryan Helsley if he accepts the qualifying offer, and you're still saving the Matz contract. Mm-hmm. And you don't have anybody who's lined up on arbitration that's getting a huge payday in arbitration. You're going to get raises, but nobody's changing, you know, the pay structure for arbitration guys, right?
Right. Brandon Donovan will do well in arbitration.
He'll do really well, but I mean, like, what's he going to jump from 2.8 to maybe 6?
No, he'll go more than that.
You think?
Yeah, because he will.
I mean, typically, I haven't run that has to comps. Do a lot more on. Really, you have comps that show it's more than that?
No, I said I haven't done the comps.
Oh, yet, I was going to say. I mean, typically the only people that jump more than that kind of percentage are like big power guys or like top of the rotation pitchers.
Yeah.
You don't usually do much more than double what you're making.
You do as you get into the later stages of arbitration.
Sure.
If you also have the, you know, some bobbles and he's got an all-star game now to go.
Sure. And let's say he gets 10. Fine.
I don't know about that. I mean, he's in that 8 range.
I'm just saying for sake of argument.
Like, I'm just spitballing. Yeah.
Yeah. But for sake of argument, let's say 10. You still have the opportunity to trade Lars Nootbaar and not pay him whatever he's going to get, jumping from 2.95 to whatever it's going to be. Like, you have plenty of flexibility. You've got guys coming behind here that you need to get up. J.J. Weatherholt needs to be here sooner rather than later. I mean, again, I'm not saying now. I'm saying by early next year, there's going to be no excuse for holding him back, barring some dramatic change in performance. And I don't think I see that coming. But the point is, as of today, they $70 million committed. Right?
$70 million? Yeah.
Next year is their total payroll now is $70 million.
Right, yeah, it's not very much. Yeah. No, and a lot of that is Arenado and Sonny Gray.
Right. And I think the point is that if you get quote unquote stuck for 1 year with Ryan Helsley, it's not the end of the world. And there's every chance that he says that's a lot of money, but if I can get a 5-year deal, I'd rather have the 5-year deal, even if it's 14 a year instead of 20.
Absolutely. There is that chance, unless he just wants to remain a Cardinal. You're right.
Could be.
I mean, you're exactly right. Quick aside, you know, the Cardinals actually kind of set the platform, if you will, or set the bar for what Brendan Donovan will likely get by that extension. You remember they signed with Tommy Edman.
Oh, okay. So, you know, eight and a half.
Eight and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go. I knew I had it at my finger.
Was that Tommy's second RBR or his last RBR?
No, it was going to be where Donovan is now.
Oh, it would be. So it would be RB2? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So there you
and
go.
Then, Tommy has the restructured deal, so it's kind of hard to.
Right. Now he's got, yeah, coming forward, moving forward, it's going to be more like 15 for the Dodgers.
It's 12.
Oh, yeah. Is it? Yeah, either that. That's a lot.
Biggest contract ever for a Stanford hitter.
Yeah, that's a lot for a guy that doesn't hit right-handed pitchers.
It's a lot. I mean, you know, that we could.
But the Dodgers can afford it. It's like no, but there's like four teams that can afford to pay Tommy Edman that money.
There might be one. Let's be honest.
good point. I mean, like he's a good player, but like if you look at him right now, I did this the other day because I was arguing with a guy on Twitter about the Fetty trade because for some reason he's still mad that Edman was a part of it. Like Tommy Edman has less WAR this year than every Cardinals regular player.
Yeah, he has a lower OBP or
lower
OPS. And
lower OPS than all but Victor Scott.
Right.
Of the guys that play the positions that he plays,
and he has a 40-point lower OBP than
and
Victor Scott.
And if you look at his season,
or is it 30?
It's 30. Yeah. If you look at his season, he had 8 home runs in April. He had an amazing April. He's done nothing since May 1st.
Well, he had a RBI single over the reach of the
statistically, he's done nothing. Like I looked this up since May 1st. Mm-hmm. I think he's the of hitters with the same roughly the same number of plate appearances he has. He's in the mm-hmm. bottom 10 in baseball.
Yeah.
And again, I love Tommy Edman. Tommy's a good player. He brings more value than just offensive numbers.
He does.
But that's not a player the Cardinals can keep.
No, he is a cautionary tale, though,
in a
way, for the Cardinals as they currently are set up. And, you know, we're kind of hopscotching from topic to topic, but it all comes together.
Sure it does.
What it is
why do you make
player evaluation,
you do?
Right?
Yeah.
And it's about player evaluation and what goes forward. You know, Tommy Edman. It does a lot of things and does a lot of things well. And I think it was a revelation when he played center field so well. That was a huge thing
for both
the Cardinals and for the Dodgers. And he obviously has the ability to have bursts like he did in April and bursts like he did in October. And, you know, that solid player. This is the caveat is if a player is so reliant on base hits to create his on base percentage, and he's not also doing damage, that should cause some awareness of future production. There is not the bedrock there of taking walks during slumps or doing damage during streaks to support long-term production. And, you know, there are different ways to describe it. Some of them are not flattering, but I was asking about like low calorie on base percentages, right? Low calorie on base percentage.
Right.
They're created entirely by hits, or worse, they're created by BABIP, batting average balls in play.
Which is that's not great. That's scary if you're getting lucky.
Right, and so as the Cardinals look at their infielders and their young players. What's the on base percentage? Which of those is Mason Wynn? You know, because there for a while, Victor Scott was running at a higher on base percentage than Mason Wynn, despite the perception that Mason, was a better hitter because he was batting second for so long, right?
Yeah.
So where, as the Cardinals look at their evaluations of Victor Scott and Mason Wynn and JJ Weatherholt and Brendan Donovan and Nolan Gorman, they do need to look at like what are the low calorie averages and what's really going to happen there and how do guys get on base. The thinking is that, you know, the other day in his office, Oliver Marmol was making the case that Mason Wynn could be a high average hitter because he uses all fields and even said that he could be that batting title type hitter. Well, we see Luis Arraez here in town. He's that batting title type hitter. It sure seems like Mason probably wants and has a bit more punch, you know, power, slugging percentage than just threading singles around or dropping liners in the gaps or things like that, Kevin. But where does Victor Scott, what kind of walks does Victor Scott need? Does he need to be like Brendan Donovan to be an impact player as far as on base percentage? Where is the long-term look that you're not just seeing history repeat itself with Tommy Edmonds?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least Victor Scott has a good walk rate.
He does.
I mean, you know, like that's going to be something point. That, right. This is something that helps him. Like if he's a guy that if he hits 250, he's on base 335, 340. I mean, that's
don't even care about his batting average. What on base percentage does he need to be an everyday player?
Yeah. 330 plus, I think.
Right. And then if he's 360, he's a star.
Well, he's an impact. Yeah. Cause he's already bringing so much defensive value. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, we had this discussion too, because you know, and I've done it in past arguments where I'll add the stolen bases to total bases to say, look, that's the kid's slugging. That's right. That player slugging.
Right.
You know, you have to take that into account. Look it up and look it in chunks of 90.
Right. Because a stolen base is no different than a double.
Correct. Or if he steals third sometime. Right. Triple. But so anyway, we get the point. But you have to look for the on base percentage and how are they getting there? You're right. Victor Scott's walk rate. That's encouraging. Is Mason's?
No. So I mean, it's not horrible, right? But he's in the bottom third of the league.
Right, but what does he need to do? He is entirely reliant on a high average for not making outs.
Well, I mean, I think there's to me, he's got to pick a lane.
Oh, okay.
In that, you either need to swing harder and do more damage, or you need to refine your eye and take more pitches.
Right.
Now, when I look at, you know, Mason Wynn's numbers, his chase rate, it's like he doesn't chase a whole lot.
He doesn't.
He doesn't swing and miss. He just doesn't walk. And I wonder if that's because teams are not afraid to throw him strikes.
That is exactly part
because
of it.
Because if you look
teams
at,
are like, we'll take a single. I mean, there's teams all over the league are like, we don't mind your singles, man. Just take them.
I mean, because as you look at him, his hard hit rate is bottom quarter of the league. His bat speed's bottom third of the league. You know, his barrel rate is bottom 20%. Mm-hmm. So average exit velo, bottom third of the league. Like, so it's very clear to me, if I were opposing him, I would just throw him strikes.
Yeah. This is where Brendan Donovan's game has shifted.
Yeah.
Like teams would challenge him. And this is where we watched Tommy.
By the way, specifically, I would throw him off speed for strikes.
Ooh, Mason.
Mason Wynn hits fastballs just fine.
Yeah,
but he doesn't hit breaking stuff, and he doesn't hit changeups.
And you're seeing that a lot from lefties against him. He had such a strong turn against lefties.
So, again, one of two things needs to change. You either need to dramatically increase your bat speed, either – and, again, I don't know that it's physical with him as much as it is maybe the effort to make contact slowing you down. But either way, you got to pick a lane. You've either got to be more discerning and do more with the strikes that you're getting and, again, adjust to off-speed, not be able to only hit fastballs. Or you're going to have to, when you hit it, do more damage with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this all brings us back to, like, what can the Cardinals get from these final 2 months, and where are they going to put the priority? Is it the illusion of contention by standing pat and seeing where this team goes? Is it the strict adherence to quote-unquote runway and them not having enough details about some of these young players?
Right.
Could they at all say, you know what? We've seen enough of some of these guys. Let's see if we can get better by trading a few and get good offers and let the offers dictate that and maybe become a better team. I mean, the Cardinals think by essentially making, and I say this carefully, I'm not suggesting that it's the same as a trade. I want to be very careful here. I'm not going to say that because trades come from outside the organization. So I'm going to use the word swap. The Cardinals feel like they got better by swapping Michael McGreevy in for Eric Fetty. They think that there'll be a better rotation here going forward.
So they think that, but they still waited an extra 5 weeks to do it.
I know. Yeah. With
the dream, the hope, the prayer that Fetty might have a few good games and somebody might give them a nickel for his services.
Actually, I think it was the fear that they would be, that they would have an injury and that they.
So what?
No, I'm just telling you, man. Like,
I know this is my point though. Like, this is their thing. This is, they operate on fear. Matt Pauly makes this point all the time. It feels like so many of their decisions. Yep.
Matt Pauly,
Cardinals pre and post game host. Sports Up and Line host at KMOX.
Oh, all right, you totally torpedoed my chance to do the FM voice
again. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I just get carried away. You know that. Yeah. But he makes that point all the time. Like, a lot of the decisions are always about what if something goes wrong. What? Well, okay, but are you just get better. Be better.
Yeah.
Like, win more games, and then if it happens, it happens. But if you spend your time stressing about something that may not happen, then you're losing games with lesser guys.
Yeah.
Or, in this case of the runway year, not finding out what you need about other players to better inform your decisions for next year.
Well, what have they missed? What have they lost? I'm really fascinated by this. Like, if you're making a list of guys who they don't have a good read on right now, how long is that list? Kevin's answer to that question comes up in the next episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball, which we'll post shortly after this one. And instead of fixating on the trade deadline, we use the trade deadline to launch into a larger conversation about really what the Cardinals have accomplished in 4 months and what they have to accomplish in the next 2 months. And if the trade deadline is just prelude to an overhaul, because the answer to the question that Kevin offers sort of speaks to the bigger questions that the Cardinals have to address. And that is, who is their core under Heim? Who is the group that will be part of the contending Cardinals when Bloom takes over? Do they have an answer? Or do they have holes to fill? The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. It's part of the Constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. Rate and review it. Subscribe to it. Subscriptions make sponsorships possible. You know the drill. You want to move on. Kevin's got a great answer for you. So, coming up shortly, or just right away already on your phone, look for the continuation of our conversation as we dive deeper than the trade deadline to maybe the winter of a lot more changes if the Cardinals don't come up with more answers. Talk to you soon, like really soon, seriously, soon.
Welcome to Paradise. With the Platinum Card, unlock over $1,500 back in value annually on select purchases across travel, entertainment, and dining. Now let's make our trip next level. Hottest restaurant? Booked with Resy. Unforgettable experiences? Event access? Endless vibes. Late hotel checkout? Yes, please. Platinum Card membership for a trip that's nothing less than iconic. Learn more at americanexpress.com/explore-platinum. Terms apply.